The next portion of Telford's notes have been difficult to sift through. He continues to be fascinated by the library, and especially the extra-dimensional space the crew had found themselves in. A demiplane on the border of the dimensions of dreams and time, according to his estimations. An extraordinary event occurred after they chased away the robed man into the twisting and churning light. The man returns, but in a much different form and with a very different demeanor. At some point between the briefest of moments, the man had aged a tremendous amount and undergone a mummification ritual. A rather impossible thing to much of our world. In a rather roundabout way, Telford has surmised that this man, Shafkem, realized now that he was very much mistaken in his original attack and even the murder of his associate. He was quite docile the second time around, and more than happy to speak and explain, even if most of it still seemed to be quite misunderstood. Time is not something you tamper with, after all. Nor is it something the average mind would hope to truly understand. This is where the notes become difficult. Our dear friend Arthur was growing concerned with moving forward, for fear of leaving his dearest friend Goatku behind, and Telford's notes here show his confusion with his companion's purpose and desire, and Telford stays with him, perhaps even comforts him, though he seems to doubt himself to be able to do it properly. He's curiously willing and wanting to try. He aids him, encourages him, sees him through his mission to return to Goatku, despite the apparent foolhardy nature of the quest. And inexplicably, though I'm sure also inevitably, the crew met up again despite taking their different routes. For some, as if almost no time passed at all, and for others, a great deal of exhausting time. Gathered together again, they found more clues to follow within Shafkem's old staff. Particularly, another recording of the detectives led the crew to another section of the library designated for the knowledge of the paranormal. In here, a notoriously strange shadow of an orrery looms overhead, though with no such device present from which it should be cast. The librarians of the Foray Logos prove to be exceedingly unhelpful, according to Telford, but he also notes that he almost respects them for it. To him, it seems, the wrong questions were asked, and therefore they had no reason to answer in a helpful manner. A strange estimation that continues to show, at least to me in my study, why Telford and Arthur are so very different, and why Telford continues to be fascinated by the other. It is here that Krugga, of all people, stumbled upon Raphael's own personal journal in a section dedicated to the Dark Tapestry. An unlikely find, indeed. But of course, one must assume that it was placed precisely, and with purpose, so that the right hands would indeed find it.
Apropos of nothing, I was wondering if, we've talked nicknames on here before, I'm quite sure anyway, or at least in one of our productions, and I was wondering about something that's tangentially related in that, has anyone ever sort of forgotten your name and assumed it was something different? Has anyone ever gone down, been in that situation where they even for months on end or weeks on end or just in a moment, they thought your name was something strange and like totally off base? It comes to mind because my first name is Freeman. Everyone assumes it's my last name. I also grew up as Dave back home. I'm also nicknamed a whole bunch of things back home. So when I came out here, I started going by Freeman. Everyone just assumed, oh, he wants to go by his last name. But that wasn't really true. It is my first name. And so I've gotten lots of confusion. People don't remember my name after the first time. It's almost always after the second time that I tell them. And I've had a couple of weird little misnames along the way. I was wondering if that's happened to any of you, especially you with those with typical names, James.
Yeah. All the time, I feel like not in a malicious way, but there was a guy I worked with at a coffee shop in Ontario who his policy was he wasn't going to learn your name unless you made it a month. So for a full month, I answered to Moby Light.
I've heard you say the same thing about employees the places you're at.
Yeah, well, I got it from him. Thanks, Mike.
Like, did they work here for a month? No, I don't know who they are.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. It's tough when it's a revolving door. So I now that I'm older and a little bit wiser, I understand that that's not the case. And it was never really the case, more so a joke.
Yeah.
People are humans, good. But Moby Light was pretty good. I had a much tighter beard at the time, and like everything was smaller, and you know, it was an interesting one. I've never felt like I actually look like Moby, but I've
you do in the
Moby.
Sense that you wear glasses and you have a bald head, like that's about it. You know?
Yeah,
like,
and I also think 18 Retail is one of the greatest albums of all time, but that's not my fault. That's Moby's fault.
I don't often get called the wrong name, though I do have a story of one time when I got called the wrong name. So when I was a kid, there was the Olympics, and Roots, a Canadian company, made all of Canada's sportswear. And I had like a red Canada Olympic flat cap, and I had it backwards on. And then I had a mullet, and I was golfing, I think, with friends, and we were probably like, I don't know, 12, 13 or something like that. And a lady came up behind me and my mullet was like flowing out of the back, and she was really old, and she was just like, are you Chelsea? And
what?
Being a young boy surrounded by a bunch of other boys, I got made fun of into the dirt.
Oh, no doubt.
And I still haven't worked through that one, so... Oh, I guess I was Chelsea for a bit.
That's rough.
Renaming Scott in the Discord to Chelsea.
Change nickname and apply.
for whatever reason, I know where the story was going. We talked about the premise of the intro, but for I was 100% sure you were going to say, are you from the past? And yeah, now I have decided that if and when I get old enough, I'm just going to do that to people dressing in retro. Just walk up to them and ask them if they're from the past.
What year is it?
Oh, it's one of the greatest lines ever. I love it. Duncan, you've got a less common name. Have you found people have a hard time remembering that?
Yeah, it's a lot of Dylan, a lot of Dustin.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of those two, I think. I've gotten a few Dallas. Really? That was weird. Okay. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't really judge people too harshly on it because I'm super terrible at it myself. Like, I started working in the hospital where I work like 3 years ago, and it was bad because everybody had masks on.
Yeah.
By the way, if you're on mic, listeners, don't mime putting a mask on because you're just holding your hand in front of your face.
it's not good for audio. And between the mouth and the microphone.
But yeah, so I'm still learning people's names, and I've just given up on about half of the people that I've worked with, and I figured they'd be gone by now, but they stuck around, and it's just too late. So it's like, you know what? You don't know my name. I'm not going to know your name. We'll get along. Just
9 months
you know
what, later, Dunk, best friend I ever had, never knew his name.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah, Dunk, I have an issue. I have a little bit of an insecurity about saying people's names wrong. So I know so many buddies, dudes, and mans. It's insane. And that goes for all genders, all people. It's just,
I have,
what's up, man? Hey, dude.
I have a lot of buddies and a whole load of friends, but none of them are actual. They're not, barely
not a single pal.
Yeah, I just figure if you like lean into the high enough, like a hey, friendly enough, you can kind of skip over the name part.
Yeah. Oh, too good. Cam, you, as I think both your first and last name are remarkably gender neutral.
All of my names are first and last names, and my first name and last name are both gender neutral. Cameron, I'm going to dox myself. I don't give a shit. Cameron John Terry. Like, so all my names are first and last names. It's fucking great. Yeah. I am simultaneously evil and everything else. But no.
Not to be trusted. Not to be
definitely
trusted.
Not to be trusted. If only I was left-handed, I could be fully sinister.
You can learn.
Oh, Freeman almost spit take there.
Oh, that was a good line. That was a good one.
I am fairly ambidextrous, but I will never be truly left-handed. Anyways, no, I have the exact opposite problem. I have the thing where people remember me 12 years later and know my name, and they're like, oh, Cam! And I'm like, son of a bitch. Like, there was a person at a coffee shop. There was a girl. Fuck, I don't remember her name. But I used to work at Chipotle when I was like a teen, and she would always come in and we would talk, and she knew my name. And 12 years later, I'm working on a food truck. I go into the coffee shop and she's like, Cam. And I'm like, I have no fucking clue who you are. And so, yeah, I have the opposite problem where I am huge though. So like, I am very easy to remember as just an individual.
Easy to spot in a crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough. I actually haven't had too many examples of people just forget my name, but they don't really necessarily insert a new one, or they always remember that it's like a sort of like, oh, is it Friedman, is it Fremont, is it this, and it gets a little confusing. But I have two totally random ones that of two people in the same place, now defunct dive bar that James and I both used to love called Side Hustle. Two different employees there, or owners of the bar. One of them, for months, when I was going there as the first time I was a regular, for months, he thought my name was Elijah for no reason at all. And the other one, the reason I thought of this is I saw one of the other today, her name is Cobra, her actual name. She had an ex-boyfriend that I apparently look like. And so she kept making the mistake of calling me by his name, which is Telford. I saw her today, hilarious. And she reminded me of that, and I was like, holy shit, I'm so glad you brought that up. I totally forgot that you thought I looked like this person named Telford for a long time. So there's your loose segue. You're welcome.
That was actually a really good segue, Freeman. We don't give you that enough, but that was actually a good one.
I didn't know Telford was a real name.
Yeah.
Apparently it is. Yeah. And well, speaking of Telford, what's he doing here in this crazy ass library with the shadow orrery overhead? What are you all doing here? I guess we have a recap of these episodes, but you know, let's just recap ourselves real quick. You've followed the recording core to this knowledge of the paranormal section of the library. If I recall correctly, Arthur's been asking more barking up the wrong tree questions all around the library. and it was Kruga who wandered into the center of this sort of strangely shaped library, into a section that is labeled as the Dark Tapestry, and found a book. What was the book title called? What was it again there, Dunk?
Oh, well, you know, let me not vamp for a minute while I'm checking out the old notes.
I'll
here.
Hop in here. It was Raphael's Personal Journey for Recreational Use Only.
It was Raphael's Personal Journey for Recreational Use Only. Journal. And I'm guessing journal. Not journey.
A Hobbit's Journey.
Round three, Raphael, there and back again, a recreational ledger.
Down the road and back again. Quite a sudden discovery off the shelf here. Arthur is wandering around sort of in the background somewhere, I think. Telford appears to have wandered closer to this section, and Aelin is not far off as Krugga discovers this book. As you pick the book up, Krugga, you notice that there is a sort of folded piece of paper slipped into it as a bookmark.
And trembling because he wants to throw this book to the ground and stomp on it for just being a book.
Sweating being surrounded by these books.
Yeah, just, oh, I swear to God, if there wasn't a librarian right over there. But yeah, he'd like to take the piece of paper out and examine it. Maybe read it.
Yeah, you slide it out, and it's neatly folded, and unfolding it, becomes obvious that this piece of paper has been torn from the spine of a book. And it appears to be another note written by Raphael.
Does anyone have bookbinding lore?
No.
Not in this case. But I have just shared the note with you all. James, if you would like to read it again.
When the whispering reeds is found, it should be read with caution. Or perhaps not at all if it can be helped. Its power has muddled my mind, and I feel an emptiness set within me. Like my death won't matter, or that it won't exist. I don't know how to explain it. You need only certain pages from within. They are clearly annotated with great detail by those who came between. I tore them out, and each tearing of the parchment I felt a curse grow upon me. They are the greatest secret of those that came between. They are hidden now. Perhaps they should be destroyed instead. A sacrifice I would gladly make for greater purpose, but I don't know if I have the strength left. Seek the weary ochre. Seek the crimson fury. Seek the waxen emerald. And above all, seek the insubstantial ebony. Follow the course. Only they can guide you now. For I am weary. I am waxen. And in my fury, insubstantial, find the empty light.
You can see the words empty light at the end are scribbled and circled many times over. As you open the book, you can see that many of the pages are actually ripped out. Whatever remaining pages there are deliberately carved out to hold within a recording core into the center of the book. And the rest of the space on every page that you flip through is covered in scribbles and the constant repetition of the words empty and death.
Uh-oh. And upon realizing what it is, Krugga would like to run it on over to Arthur with it outstretched as far away from him as possible. Circle back around. Probably just breeze right past Telford and not even notice him. Here, Arthur, this seems to have been something of Raphael's. I think you should take it. It's a book and it's sickening.
Easy to take that the wrong way.
He takes the book from Krugga. And looks at it, and so this core is built right into the book. Is that what I'm going to take away?
Well, it's like, you know, you see in a comedy movie or something like that, where like the pages have been carved out, and you put a gun inside the book as like a safety spot. Like, yeah, there's just a circle carved in all the pages, and a core like just sitting in the center of the book. And all the negative spaces are covered in empty and death and scribbles.
Okay, so he'll take out the core and read over Raphael's note number 2. Before clutching it to his chest and trying to wave over Talford without being too loud about it, because he does understand that this is, in fact, a library. But last I remember, Talford had the vision stick, the what is recording it called, rod. Please? Recording rod, thank you.
The vision stick.
Vision stick, that's pretty good.
Wish I'd thought of that.
I've had one of those before, but it was a little different than this.
Talford will let out a sigh and then trudge over to Arthur before seeing the book and hurrying up just a little bit. Interest peaked.
Yes, Mr. Arthur. What is it you seem to have found?
Our phobic friend Kraka actually managed to find a novel, Ledgers by Raphael. He must have stashed them here before he... Well, inside it was another recording core, and I know you have the corresponding rod, whose name I can never remember, even though we just talked about it. Is it? Is it a recording rod?
It's a recording rod.
Why can I not fucking get that? Recording rod. And he'll proffer the sphere out to you.
Talford will, with a flourish, pull it out from a sleeve. Pop the old core out. That disappears back up the sleeve. And then hold out his hand for the core.
For a second, Arthur wonders if you're a concept juggler by trade, and he offers it to you.
Talford will look around. What is the situation? How many people are looking around at us right now?
There's just a couple of librarians milling about, and there are guards at whatever entrances you've seen and exits you've seen so far. But that's about it.
So we have a couple of options here. As we know, these typically work best at the location they're supposed to be. And did Arthur give Talford the note to read or no?
No, he didn't even think about it.
Okay. Does anyone have any ideas where this was recorded at?
No. If I were to guess, since the Star Watch detectives whose narrative we appear to be following led us to this room, and the core was found hidden here. And if I know my nephew well enough, it would be hidden in this particular spot, because this is where it is to be activated.
I see. I just know that we've received other cores that were not quite in the same place, but...
And Talford will look for a kind of tucked away place that we can potentially play this and not attract too much attention.
Can I just... point out too, I love that was like an intelligence versus wisdom, like deduction, both, right? It's like, yeah, it was really good. You're like, well, we haven't found them all in the spot they were supposed to be, so, you know, why would it be here? But then it's like, but I know my nephew, and it's probably here on purpose. And it's just like this little, they're just both really good deductions, but for different reasons, and I love it. But yeah, there are lots of nooks and crannies in this place. But the place that is likely to be less visible is where you found it, in that sort of center where this wall of books that has a walkable kind of path on top, kind of circles around like a sickle, and we're in oddly to this center point. It's like that is the most private area for sure, because from all angles there are, you know, you can't see through the wall kind of thing. So that's where you would guess to be the safest place.
It's like the LG symbol, but upside down.
There you go.
Yeah, it's where a nook meets a cranny.
Mm.
Wow.
Mr. Weinmar, if you could be so kind as to get her, and Talford will point over to the librarian, the fuck out of here.
My pleasure. And Aelin goes over and just starts asking questions about books. And kind of pointing off in a different direction, and will attempt to lead the librarian away.
So right. These books, full of words, are they?
Hey, I'm reading here!
Well, if you're reading, why do you need to ask me a question about books?
Shh, 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 shh.
Moral support.
28 diplomacy.
What do you say? I'm not going to skip over the roleplay.
Ma'am, could you please point me to the nearest restroom?
Oh, yes, of course. You'll have to leave this library. Just loop around the way you came in, and you'll find one just a couple steps
down the
hallway.
Yeah, please just take me along. I have a hard time seeing. I don't know if you've noticed, but I am an old elf.
Well, you look awfully young to me. Quite spryly, in fact.
I almost dipped into Aelin there because I was going to say that one of my eyes was not good. And then I was like, oh, yeah, I'm not playing that character right now.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Oh, wait. I am playing Aelin. Ah! I'm not playing Tulok.
I was going to say anything. I was just going to let it go.
Oh, I was going to say something.
So many.
Jesus Christ.
So many bloods from the nose.
Anyways, I'm playing one of my several half elves with the same voice. So
same demeanor.
Yeah. Anyways.
Did you just say anyways, turn away and take a huge drink.
Are you claiming to be partially blind? That's what you're going with?
Yeah.
Okay.
He rolls a 28 diplomacy on that shit. She believes him. Let's continue with the story.
The problem is I don't believe it. All right. She puts her books down. I was like, oh, okay, well, you know, just come along with me. I'll show you towards the exit. The guard can take it from there. Which immediately tells you, you have limited time here, because she's not going to take you to the bathroom. She's going to take you as close as she's willing to.
Fine. As soon as they get away from there, he sees a book in the corner that has big enough text to read and from a distance, and then he says, oh, can you... And then he brings her over there and says, oh, do you have any information on this book? And then tries to get her involved in reading it with him or talking about it. I'll pee later.
Okay. Oh, this has got some. Are you sure? Someone in your condition might cause damage to the books if you aren't careful.
No, it would be nice if you could read me a little bit of the introduction.
If you'd like, I can show you to our Braille section.
We've thank you. No,
we've got a
audiobooks are better.
Oh, well, we've got an incredible repertoire here of infernal books in Braille. We could always do that. No, if you're interested in that.
Did I ask for any of this information? 29 intimidation.
Well, excuse me, good sir. No, you asked to be sent to the bathroom, and now you refuse to be there. I am not here to just serve your every whim.
Let's talk about the 29 intimidation here before you keep going here.
Fucking douchey decimal system over here.
Guards! This guy is bullying me with that. Now the guard wanders over. It's like, what's going on over here?
And then he's really leaning into it now because he's like, well, fuck it. I guess they got to do their thing over there. I just asked for a little help from this friendly neighborhood librarian who turns out is not so friendly and is giving me a hard time over here. Sir.
Okay, now they're out of sight and Ayla is just milking this like angry customer shtick. And you appear to be mostly left alone. You can hear their voices from around the corner.
I'd like to talk to a manager.
Karen Weimer.
Karen, get over here. Yeah.
He does have that short haircut.
He truly does have the gift of gab. Anyways.
And chunk, slot in the memory core into the recording rod. Sit back and enjoy the show.
Kruga nodding sagely like he knows Gab as like a god that gives gifts out.
Yes, of course I've heard of him.
Yes.
You activate the recording rod with this new core, and a scene of the Star Watch detective springs to life, and it is much more vivid than usual, and sure enough, they are quite near you and where you stand now. The only thing that flickers for a moment is, in fact, the shadow of the non-existent orrery overhead in this library. The recording seems to try to attempt to match the timing of the current one slowly spinning. And once it actually manages to, the scene sort of sets itself in and begins. Smolder is actually skimming a book this time, but his usual short attention span is constantly pulled to the room in the shadow above, or being cast from above. And Scaly is patiently scanning the titles along the book spines in the said section that is labeled the Dark Tapestry. Smolder eventually speaks up.
You know what Delarice means, Scaly?
Huh? What it means?
Yeah, the name itself. You know how names usually have meanings from old languages and whatnot?
Sure. And no. How would I know that?
Well, Della means pleasure or delight. And Reese means...
Wait. You weren't really asking. You know. Why didn't you say so before?
I don't know. I just like names, I guess. I didn't think it was important.
Everything is important in an investigation like this. Even the most pointless and mundane can be much, much more.
Fair enough. Well, like I said, Della means pleasure or delight, and Reese means enthusiasm or passion.
Hmm. Nearly the same thing, that.
Yeah, might explain a little something about the people behind these ritual killings.
How do you figure that?
Well, it's hard to imagine that sort of thing being done for fun, right? If not fun, then why not pleasure?
Are they the same too?
Sure, they can be, but mutually inclusive?
No. I suppose not. By now, Scaly has moved on to the next section, and the image begins to sputter like the others before. It's jolting and sudden, almost nauseating compared to the seamless image that was just there. And that's when the guard and the librarian over by Aelin notice this shuddering above their heads. Or is it at their feet? They can't quite tell, but it's definitely along this shadow. And it starts to distract them a little bit.
Aelin would like to use the feat Charming Liar. And so he continues to lie to them about the situation that's going on. Do you even understand who I am? Yes, I might have some issues seeing, but that does not take out the fact that I am a very important member of society. I might be from... Oh, God. The West Gate, but my family's had money for a long time.
God, that pulls their attention straight back to you. It's just like this piece of shit. They're trying to do, they're doing their best, but they hate you for sure. So as this happens, you can hear the voices raise a little bit around the corner, but then the scene continues. And as Scaly walks along this new section, you just hear,
"Hello, what do we have here?"
What's that?
What was the calling card we saw at the scenes? Do you remember?
The calling card? There could have been several if you ask me. You don't see shit like most of what we saw. Ever.
Nah. What's the one that really stood out to you? What feels most deliberate? More deliberate than the others?
Usually whatever seems to have been done after the deed is what I've learned.
Which was?
The moss. It was clearly stuffed into their mouths after the fact. You can tell because whatever they went through would have bitten down hard in the process. But the moss was just sitting gently in their mouths, like it had been placed carefully.
Bingo.
And that's when Scaly pulls a sizable tome from the shelf and stares at the spine for a moment before turning it over to look at the cover. He then holds it up to Smolder and shows him the symbol engraved on the leather. That of a skull dripping with moisture, with moss stuffed in its mouth.
Well, I'll fucking be.
And the scene shuts down and fades away.
And Aelin comes around the corner, wiping blood from his elven curve blade.
I'm sorry, what?
I kid.
Talford is going to go where... Scaly just pulled the book and see if that book is there.
I does not.
Are any of you familiar with that unholy symbol?
Hey, Freeman.
Are any of us familiar with that unholy symbol?
Roll, like a roll.
No, it's no, not exactly no.
No, not exactly no.
Well... Where do we go from here?
He mentioned a book in the notes called The Whispering Reeds. He mentions it again in this most recent one. At this point, he offers the note to Telford, thinking that there may be a clue in it, as opposed to just more evidence of his nephew's growing madness.
Telford will quickly skim through it. Empty light, whispering reads, whispering. Do I know what the whispering reads is, like a forbidden text, having hung out with Morlabit and everything else?
Yeah, roll me a society, I think.
Okay, blind GM roll. Bop.
It's like on the tip of your brain. You feel like you've heard the phrase before, the name. There's a certain amount of infamy to it, but it's also really old and you are unfamiliar. You have not come across it. You have not read it. You don't know anything other than it is in certain circles known, like certain literary circles.
Out of character question, just for our knowledge and maybe for the listeners. The Whispering Reeds, Tulok has a copy of it.
Yep.
So is this a book where there have been many like versions made of it or several?
When you found it, you learned that there were many made. There was only one printing and it was made with the intention of like helping against a certain kind of cultiness. But it ended up helping it. So most of them were destroyed. So there are considered to be very few left in the world.
Okay.
It would have been a bit of a big deal at its time, which is a long, long time ago. Centuries.
Seek the weary ochre. Seek the crimson fury. Seek the waxen emerald. Above all, seek the insubstantial ebon. God.
Freeman, why would I roll to know these things?
Good question.
Society?
Roll me an occult. You're reading this and actually roll me a perception real quick.
Okay.
Sensing motive on this text. You find that there is this muddled confusion in how it's written. It's quite clear as you cover these notes left behind that there is this descent into almost madness or what have you happening with Raphael. And so when you come across that weary ochre or crimson fury kind of spot, it seems like ranting to you. It seems like a hint, but it's not cohesive enough. But you get the feeling that at the very end of this note, because the reason you get that feeling is because it follows up with "I am weary, I am waxen," and it's like his thoughts and his emotions are getting all muddled together. But that final line stands out to you as if a moment of clarity. Find the empty light.
Ah, find the empty light. It's scribbled on here several times and circled. And do any of you know what that is? No? Okay. Aelin, you made friends with the librarian, yes?
You could say that.
Okay, great. Could you ask her if she knows anything about...
Wait, empty light.
Yeah.
We already cast shadows, but there is no light. Could that be something?
That could be something, but we're supposed to find the empty light, and if that's the case, we've already found it, so we would have found what we're looking for, yes?
Oh, good job. Let's go home.
Aelin listens to Arford, because he is first bound to Arford over Telford. And looks up and then realizes that there is the staircase. And he, as discreetly as he possibly can, is going to try to mount the staircase to the top of this bookcase and just see if there's anything up there.
Sure, yeah. There's a little ladder to climb up to the top of this sort of wall.
Is there stairs on the other side there, or?
So the staircase start from the top of the wall and go up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So you have to climb the ladder to the wall, to the top of the wall, and then, to the staircase that leads up around the center circle.
So Aelin is going to, stealthily as possible, do this.
Okay. Roll me a stealth check.
Hero point. 33.
Okay, you kind of get to the ladder that's here in the nook and cranny and climb up, peeking over. You see the librarian and the guard kind of chatting together about how annoyed they are with you, and you wait for the perfect moment, and you just get up there so that they don't see, crouch along, and go up the staircase. nary a creak in said stairs. And there's a little trap door that leads up, and you give that a little push, and sure enough, it opens, and there's a bit of dust that kind of comes through. You peek your head up, and you find you're looking at a rather large, above this library, kind of circular room with bookshelves neatly placed in a circle around an even spacing. But it's just dusty and dark, and doesn't appear to have, like, there's a whole bunch of, like, you know, just like spare chairs and a whole, you know, the bookshelves are a little bit broken down. There's actually no books up there at all. Yeah, there's just like a lot of like extra goods and like and stuff, like different pieces for repair and whatnot. It's just like a storage room, like a disused library storage room.
So as Aelin went up the stairs, his last kind of thing that he did to the crew as he disappeared out of sight was just to put up a hand as if to just say, wait and let me take a look. And I would like to thorough search, looking to see if there's any footprints, any disturbed, like scratches in the floor where there could be a secret door, anything like that.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Roll me a perception.
Arthur mounts up in anticipation of having to climb a ladder.
Oh, the conversations James and I had on how good goats are as climbers before this. It's just so funny.
It's going to be a 16, unfortunately.
I mean, you see no evidence of anyone being up here for a while. The dust is quite well settled, and it even seems to you that, like, if Raphael was here days or a week ago or something, there doesn't even seem to be evidence of that. If should he have come in this room, it looks like it's just barely ever touched.
Yeah, but I mean, let's be honest here. What the fuck is time? Because of everything that we've seen in this library, in these weird pocket dimensions and shit, you know, he's not entirely sure it even matters what time it is. So if he sees nothing, he sees nothing. So there's no doors or anything like that?
Nope.
Any mechanisms for the orrery?
No, not at all. No evidence of an orrery at all.
Okay. Aelin will go back to the top of the stairs and is going to look down upon his crew and just kind of shrug and, you know, portray to them that he didn't find anything.
This light that's on the map, is that symbolic or does that exist? Because it kind of looks like it's the center of a pillar, so I just wanted to confirm.
That's more or less what I'm relying with. I'm kind of reusing these maps. Yeah, it's definitely, I think I said earlier, it's illuminating most of the room. But that's about it. It's not indicative of anything in particular. I imagine almost if that light is like more of like a lighting, a column that emits magical light.
Right.
Speaking of light, is there anything we can roll to know about empty light?
Yeah, you can roll, I would take an occultism or religion, I think.
Blind roll.
You have sometimes heard empty light being referenced to the silvery light given emitted by the astral plane itself. Because it's not a magical light, it's not the light of the sun. It is, you know, its own sort of thing.
I know that the empty light can sometimes refer to the light produced by the astral plane. When you see something summoned from the astral plane, the blinding light that comes with it for a brief moment is sometimes referred to as the empty light. But I don't know how we're supposed to. If we're supposed to shift into that plane, or that would be incredibly dangerous.
Well, we did find ourselves in a dummy plane that already pre-existed in the library. So perhaps we should ask a librarian if they know anything of this empty lights.
Oh, yeah. Aelin, you made friends, right?
Aelin is still up top.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Arthur, you also rolled a religion check, I see.
Yeah. You silly not to.
For Arthur, the term possibly relates to a pale blue light that can sometimes, through certain objects, shine from another dimension and are sometimes linked to the glow of a ghost, but a ghost that's like not on the River of Souls or not even on the material plane. It's related to ghosts or spirits in some way, but you can't seem to pin it down. But you have this separate use of the word for sure than Telford.
He'll convey that to everybody in the vicinity.
It's like not so much conflicting as it is not helping to narrow it down.
Crooka, you seem like the friendly sort. Are you good at talking to people?
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Talking to people.
Yeah.
Good at it.
Yeah.
You bet.
Awesome.
And with a zero diplomacy.
Yeah, that's completely fine, bud. I just think that, you know, this you might be motivated to get the fuck out of the library.
Motivated? Me? Out of the library? And sure, he'll march on up to the librarian. Hey!
Huh? They kind of moved a bit farther south into the map, but the librarian turns around. Yeah, can I help you?
You got any books on this empty light?
On what empty light?
Well, it's either, what was it, the spectral plane, astral plane, one of these planes. Where's your plane section? Next to avionics, I imagine.
Wright Brothers. Yes.
Definitely some references to the astral plane, because the paranormal does connect to the River of Souls, but if you want to go into specific planar knowledge, you'll have to go to the planar knowledge wing, which is down this way. It starts like giving you the directions down the hall, but then there's also, and starts giving you like more directions towards other connecting topics.
Slow down. I want both plane and knowledge, not or.
Nice.
And that's when another librarian kind of like is wandering nearby and just kind of walks over. He's like, I'm sorry, did you ask about the empty light?
Oh, did I ask about the empty light? Me?
Yes, well, I agree. Dumb question, because obviously you didn't. I heard that.
Yeah, I was speaking very loud in this library.
There's me put in my place. Thank you.
Humble.
I've not heard that word bandied around too much, but it rings a bell to me. I recall a certain sort of place here on the foyer logos that's often talked about among some of the younger librarians should they come across it, but it's a place that not many people go. It's called the Cathedral of Empty Light.
Oh, a place for hip young librarians. That must be the coolest place in town.
Well, you'd think, but mostly they think it's the rumor mill runs in its original origin. It's mostly disused now, but it's believed that it's just called the Cathedral Empty Light because of the magical windows within. You can see there's no windows here in the foreign logos, but they used to depict sunshine before, fake sunshine, of course, using magics. So it was called Empty Light. Nowadays, it actually depicts the, as best as some of the magical artists can, the astral plane itself, the sort of silvery shimmer and maelstroms and such.
Mm.
What do you need? What do you want with the empty light?
Let's pretend that I have a good answer for that and go on to where it is.
Oh, right. Well, I mean, if all of the apprentice librarians get in there and not cause a lot of trouble, I'm sure you'll be fine too. Those guys are rascally, let me tell you. And if you want to go, here to go. And he pulls out a piece of parchment and he draws you a quick map of the corridors to go down.
Excellent, thank you. You know what? I might start reading books after this day.
That's hilarious, because if you didn't read books, there'd be no reason you'd be in the Fire Logos.
Oh, God. That is ridiculous
gold.
On its face.
Pure gold. Oh.
And he just wanders off.
Well.
And that's role-playing with Duncan.
You could hear the minute where the NPC blue screened to death.
Oh, shit.
Aelin is kind of sitting up there, not really knowing what's going on, and just because he still thinks there's something up there, we'll roll a thievery. It sucks. He's just like, fuck it, there's nothing up here. And then we'll use boop, 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 boop. Hat of disguise and glamour, and just kind of make himself look like a fucking, like a librarian, and then walk down to join the group. Okay. And then
walk down with all kinds of confidence. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Kuka, what did you learn?
I think I found exactly what we're looking for. This Cathedral of Empty Light. It's a hip party place for the young librarians.
I think I went to a rave there once.
No, he said hip.
What? Does that mean something else now? Back in my day, I was hip, and then hip changed, and I didn't like it anymore.
Oh, no, I misunderstood. It's just underground, but here are the directions to find it. And he will show them the directions. Is it underground?
Yeah, so remember, this Foray Logos is like this big sort of pyramid-esque structure that is just filled with weaving pathways and mysterious rooms, and you know, is akin to the best analogy I really have is like the Hogwarts castle, where there's lots of hidden kind of passages and forgotten places and magical kind of sections and stuff.
Right.
Yeah, so I guess we skedaddle that way. Talford will light up another cigarette and adjust his clothes and start walking with purpose.
Arthur will compliment Krukka on his ability to discern information, even without having touched any books.
Helpful to be direct and almost unnerving.
Yes, I think we must not underestimate how intimidating your size and your ferocity is.
When you don't got brains, use what you got.
Yeah, you really walk right up to that line of unnerving, don't you? Just look at it, stare into the void.
But it is equaled by his kindness.
Big heart, no end of the sentence.
Big heart, ellipses.
Big heart, strong valves. Aelin's dumb follows.
Big heart, chest hurts, need a doctor. All right.
You make your way to what is apparently called the Cathedral of Empty Light. And you enter in through the western side of this cathedral. And what stands before you is a very grandiose and dusty room. It's magically lit with candles and torches and chandeliers and candelabras, but is quite dim within. Among the most extraordinary elements of the room are these elaborate floor designs that depict stars in the middle western and middle eastern and very center of the room. There's a fountain to the southern side of the room and a dais with a podium to the north, with a couple of chairs. And all along the length of this room, which is long from north to south, is filled with pews. Above head is an obvious balcony that wraps around the sides of the room, the ceiling reaching way above even that, covered in frescoes depicting different scenes of deific acts. And as you enter the room and kind of look around, you can see that upon that balcony to the southern side is, in fact, a very obvious massive pipe organ. Not depicted here in front of you now, but rest assured, it is there. This massive pipe organ that sits on the balcony above. The curved stairs that lead to the balcony are to the northern side by the dais. As you step in, there are several beautiful windows all along the side of the room, and you can see light coming in from the windows on the balcony level as well. And they sure enough do depict this swirling silvery light that also helps to illuminate this room very dimly.
Talford will go ahead and just roll perception on the room. Oh, good. Natural 2 for a 50. I'm going to hero point that. There we go, 29.
It is incredibly still and quiet in here. Your footsteps echo as you march along. Even if you try to do so quietly, there is always a bit of a sound. It's such a large open space. And even though you didn't roll a check for that specifically, your perception, you're a psychic. You feel a magical resonance all through this room. You feel it mostly through the library anyway. But there is this sort of stale, old kind of essence to it. Something just foundationed into this place.
So I somehow accidentally started riding Goku with Arthur. So that's pretty chill.
Foundry for the win.
The magic I got you. In this place is it's stagnant and heavy. It feels like it's been here undisturbed for an incredibly long time.
And Telford will go ahead and cast Detect Magic, just trying to figure out a little more, I guess. Any most powerful magic effect, I guess? Is that all I'm getting here?
I mean, the windows themselves are covered in magic. All the lights and the candelabras and everything are all magic. You feel powerful magic coming from the stars on the floor and across the center side. I think those are the ones that stand out the most.
When the recording rod cut out and got glitchy, that was still at the library, correct? Or was that somewhere else?
Yeah, no, it did. Each core has been a little fresher as you go, has been a little bit more in tune with its portrayal based on the place you're at. The last one did stutter at one point, but it was almost as if, in that case, it felt more of like a transition of scenes.
Okay.
Rather than the original two that were like really struggling because they're so old.
Yeah, Telford is going to just follow behind Arthur, lit cigarette, staring up, just eyes shining white, almost pure pearly white, and just taking in everything as the magic detects around him. And
Arthur, you seem like the religious sort. Is there anywhere in here that your nephew would have been drawn towards?
Yeah, he'll roll a religion check, I suppose, just to try and figure out what this place was used for at one point, to get a precursory knowledge. But beyond that, he is going to take the search exploration activity.
Sure. With your religion, you have a hard time pinpointing something that would matter to Raphael specifically. It seems to you that this place could very well represent Sarenrae. It could represent Desna. It could represent a pantheon of gods. It's certainly things to do with like stars, maybe travel, using the stars as travel, the sun, this, that, and the other. It's very, very vague. There's even a fountain at the south that could very well be Gosra. Could even be Erastel. There are reasons to think any of these very vague symbols and motifs could apply to many gods and many, many pantheons. So nothing points towards, as far as you could tell, Pharasma, which is who Raphael was a cleric of.
On the meta level, Freeman said some stuff in there that's making me like, but Telford doesn't know.
So Aelin will follow them in, avoiding notice, and he's kind of got his like criminal mind going here. He's casing the joint, taking a look around, and as he kind of moves up the aisle towards the apse here, heading to the north, he does notice that there's three chairs, and maybe this is just the map, maybe this is something important, but there were three colors mentioned: ochre, crimson, emerald, and then ebony. So there's three colors, and then the insubstantial ebony might be somewhere else. I don't know if any of them are exactly ochre, but that's just kind of like, I don't know, maybe he doesn't know what the fuck ochre is. So he's just moving towards these chairs.
I don't think you do either, because ochre is a vegetable and ochre is an orange
color. Ochre. Sorry. I don't even like ochre. It's all gummy and gross.
If you cook it right, it's great.
Yeah, you gotta cook it right.
It goes good in the gumbo. But yeah, you're not wrong. There are three chairs in there. There is a green one. There is a red one. But the other one seems to be more of like a burgundy color or something. So it doesn't quite match your three, even four colors. As Ebon was specifically mentioned, which, I mean, we don't want to be pedantic. It's a shade, but it doesn't matter. But as you step forward towards those chairs to sort of investigate and kind of piece some of these ideas together in your head, you notice that, you know, this very grand sort of dais with multiple levels the chairs are on, and that podium in the center, there is this massive, despite what the map shows you, this massive closed ledger, this huge book sitting there.
Doesn't look recreational about that.
Aelin will move towards it, avoiding notice.
Arthur will head towards the fountain in the south, or what he perceives to be the south.
And Aelin, you get up close to this ledger, and yeah, it's just sitting there, closed, bit of dust on it. Roll me a perception check.
But I'm not good at that.
Oh, wow. You're really not.
3 on the die for a 13.
I started at 13. What are you doing?
I'm dumb. Aelin is, and also Aelin is dumb too.
It just looks like a big old book. And we're talking like a big hefty thing. Like,
is there a title? Like, I mean,
wait, nope, it's blank on the cover. Blank on the spine.
He opens it.
You open it and it creaks like it's a brand new book. Like it's maybe never been opened, or at best once or twice.
God, I wish I had bookbinding lore.
You would still be able to tell whether or not it's hand bound, which could make a difference in this kind of situation.
You crack that book open, and it is completely blank inside. And you know how like a new book does, like all the pages kind of move with the spine as it's, you know, because it hasn't been worked yet, so they all start to shift along, and some of the pages immediately want to flip with the cover opened up. But then you notice that somewhere in the midst of the pages there is a little gap, an unevenness, and you flip to that, and there is clearly one page that has been ripped out
from the podium here. He goes, "Psst, come take a look at this," and hopes that someone who is smart comes to look.
Is there a particular reason you're being so quiet?
I'm overwhelmed by the beauty in this room. Also, I'm kind of going to my baser instincts and feel like I'm stealing things. So this is kind of how I generally operate. In fact, being loud is uncomfortable for me.
I see.
Arthur will look in the fountain. Or basin or whatever this is on the south.
Yeah, and it just appears to be this very, like, very still, stale water kind of sitting in it.
He'll touch it. I mean, that's worked out well for him in the past.
This is typical James maneuver.
James cannot help himself.
I was going to say, Arthur might be given pause.
Oh!
That's not a pun. Well, it is a pun, but it was pun not intended. because, like, very long ago, off screen, when Arthur first featured in the beginner box, he drank from a fountain not unlike this, although it was in, like, a catacomb, and it made him very, very sick.
And then we just left him there sick for a while.
And we left him there dry heaving.
He's coming back to puke on us to heal.
I wasn't able to make the second session, listeners, so they took some creative liberty with our fluffy boy.
Yeah, he can be heelbot in the corner, dry heaving, unable to assist.
So he does pause at this, but he has some experience in this, so he just dips his paw into it instead of just drinking directly from the bowl.
Okay, dips his paw and there's a little ripple, gives a little lick. And, it tastes quite stale and is a little bit dusty almost.
Puff. Puff.
Goku starts reaching in for a drink.
he'll pull the reins, and he'll mount up Goku at this point and head to Aelin on the dais or pedestal or whatever we're calling it, stage.
Okay. Sure.
Lectern.
Duncan Thesaurus Forbes. Telford, roll me a perception check as you get up near this ledger.
That is a 25.
You very quickly notice that there's a little bit of a pattern on the dust around this book as if it had been opened recently, but before Aelin's attempt just now. You also quickly notice the page ripped out. But you give a glance around, and you don't see much of anything.
Moon runes.
We'll cast Detect Magic, removing all the other magic that I know.
And you, it takes you a sec to really start narrowing all that down. There's so much magic in this rune. You're kind of navigating through, and you're like, yeah, I know that, I know that, I know that. And you eventually manage to hone something in that is not far from where Goku now stands with Arthur on his back. And in fact, as you pin it down, Goku is like kind of starting to meander a little bit towards one of the pews. And with a little bit of like a tap of his hooves, like reaches down to like nibble at something underneath. And that is when, Telford, you notice there is a crumpled up piece of paper and a ball underneath the pew.
Stop that goat! Stop that goat!
Arthur will pull back on his bridle and try and wrestle the piece of paper from his mouth. Very, very futilely, I would hazard a guess. I don't even think he can reach.
Yeah, so Telford will come over and smooth it out.
Well, you reach under to grab it, and your hand grabs onto much more than paper. It grabs onto a hard spherical thing wrapped inside of it.
Ooh, bitch.
Telford will pull up the paper, feeling the heft in his hand, before gently unwrapping it.
And it almost seems too fortuitous because it's exactly what you just found in the previous wing. It's a note and a core together.
Krugge, you might want to look away. We're going to do some reading real quick.
Oh, God. And he spits. I thought you said there was no words in that book.
Just when you were starting to warm up to it.
Just has to get acclimatized with like a loose, like a blank piece of loose leaf or something.
Just some printer paper.
Ridiculous. Just ridiculous.
But yeah, Telford will put his hand on Goku's head to like hold it away so he can't snatch the note, and then hand it up to Arthur.
All right. You hand it up to Arthur, and this is what it reads.
You won't find the lenses. They aren't here. Though they were created. Only the pages. You need those to understand them. They have a use. They can stop her. Climb to the Tower of Empty Light. Face the past. The ancient past. It tore me apart. Time. Time. Hold it together. Tell Tulok. And Physic. They need to know. They need to be alive. Find the pages. Where the detective showed their true colors. Where their trail covered the floors and the walls. Where the veils were lifted. It's all around you.
Sad.
Telford will produce the recording rod with a flourish and kind of smack it into his hand so the other core pops out, tucking that one away into his sleeve before putting the new one in the top and stamping it against the floor to get it to start.
You activate the recording rod. The core whirs to life with anticipation. The latent magic in the cathedral. you can very obviously tell spills into it and causes the rod to vibrate like never before. The recorded scene almost explodes out to cover the entire cathedral. The walls appear to have a sort of layer of imagery over them, the rest of the room covered in a near ghostly images of, as the furniture of the past doesn't quite match the position of those in the here and now. Scaly is seen for once without his snout in a book, and instead marveling at the room's architecture. The Whispering Reeds, however, is held in one hand, and Smolder is eyeing Scaly closely, as if this change in Scaly's attention from book to surroundings is worth noticing.
Say, Scaly, the book seems to have had an effect on you. What's the deal?
Scaly drops his gaze sharply and slowly turns towards Smolder.
I guess you wouldn't know.
Wouldn't know what?
The Whispering Reeds. It's sort of infamous. In a cult following kind of way. If you'll pardon the overly apt phrasing.
Oh, bookworm kind of stuff, eh?
You could say that. Nearly every copy was destroyed. Fewer than a couple dozen are thought to exist. It's dangerous. And exactly what is needed to connect the Haravexes to these crimes.
Right, a real collector's item. What about the Delarice? They seem real enough now. Does this cathedral help us connect them?
Likely just pawns. Workhorses that will never be considered as worthy as a bloodline. Houses like the Haravex always think that way. Think their blood is worth more than anyone's actual contribution. And, well, just might be true if their actual bloodline is connected to something from the Dark Tapestry. If they're studying this book, Gods of the Dark Tapestry, enough to make even this old man stand in awe. They say things like that are older than time itself, and far more destructive.
You know, you're suddenly a lot more talkative than usual. This has really gotten you shaken, huh?
Scaly scowls and turns away.
Come on. Let's check out the floor above.
And the two make their way toward one of the spiral staircases in the north and walk up. Smolder continues to ponder aloud, following Scaly's ascent.
Something doesn't sit right about the Delarice. They're basically an urban legend come true. Feels more like they're expert spy masters than just a family of bastard workhorses. Besides, if they are so-called bastards, don't they have the bloodline too?
Scaly gives no response, and Smolder never takes his eye off him and the book as they cautiously ascend the balcony above. And as this happens, they are starting to get away from you, going upstairs. But the rod starts to sputter as they get farther from you.
Telford follows, holding the rod up to maintain the signal and the image clarity.
Arthur and Goatku ascend as well.
Aelin, with his hand on the hilt of the elven curve blade, follows.
Krugger just bails. No, you know what, I'll go with him.
Krugger goes home. The two detectives reach the top of the stairs and take a moment to look out over the cathedral floor from this upper balcony level. It wraps the length of the room and designed in a manner of an old church that would permit a tightly packed standing room congregation to witness a sermon held below. Both detectives take a long moment to take in the view. Scaly leans on the railing while Smolder gingerly looks over, wary of the drop to the floor below.
Just like the ritual scene.
Only less blood.
Yeah.
Scaly steps away from the railing and continues south along the balcony. A shimmering light is formed through the magic of the rod, as if natural light were shining through the stained glass windows. There was a stark difference between what they were then and what they are now. The current windows appear to be plain in shape and transparency, not stained at all and with no art, but magically altered to admit a silvery light and distant churning of storms beyond the panes, a clear attempt at depicting the silver sea itself, the astral plane. But somehow the stained glass of the past interacts with those churning patterns of the present, and before your eyes it casts shadows of horrible scenes of predators beyond imagining, skulking and hunting and devouring along the river of souls. The detail is impossibly stark, and there is a blending of magic here and in the rod that seems to put you right in the scene. Something much more than the replication of audio and visual, as if emotion was somehow also recorded by the room itself. Anxiety and fear, determination and suspicion all fill the scene as you follow it. Scaly reaches the southern end and stands before a magnificently grand pipe organ. Without hesitation, places the whispering reeds on the music stand and sits down on its bench. Smolder, a few steps behind, says,
"Don't tell me you play."
Without a word, Scaly flicks a switch and starts pulling and pushing numerous stops on the organ.
"Why did we come to this cathedral, Scaly? Why is it that since we got here, that's the first book you've picked up, but not read a word?"
The low droning hum slowly rises from the organ's mechanisms, gently hitting a quiet but encompassing crescendo.
"Damn, you do play."
"We all play, Smolder. But what matters is who outplays who."
"You aren't going to hand over that book as evidence, are you?"
"Too dangerous. Something like this can't be passed into the right hands. There are no right hands. That's the point. That's why they were mostly destroyed. The contents were supposed to help defeat those who served an entity known as the Empty Death. Instead, it bolstered them."
Smolder slowly stalks forward and toward the back of Scaly, and Scaly cracks his knuckles and arches his fingers over the keys, taking a deep breath in and closing his eyes. Smolder continues forward, eyeing the book over Scaly's shoulder.
"I'm gonna need it, Scaly. It's the only chance of bringing them down."
Scaly hits a chord on the keyboard and a blast rings out into the room, rattling the candelabras and chandeliers strewn about the entire place. A divided look comes across Smolder's face as he's unsure if it's a warning or an opening.
"You aren't going to leave me much choice, are you?"
Another chord blasts from the organ. And with lightning speed, Smolder leaps forward with a flash of a hidden blade striking out for a death blow. And the blade plunges into Scaly. But it's no mortal strike. Scaly turns and the image of a lizardfolk melts away to reveal a handsome human face. With fierce smoldering eyes that even rival that of the Ifriti.
"It doesn't belong to you, Delarice."
"You said there are no right hands. Who are you to claim it?"
The man stands to reveal his catch of Smolder's wrist that prevented a full thrust from hitting anything vital. He pulls Smolder's hand away and the blade slides from his side.
"Rightful hands are a different matter altogether, Delarice. I am Kalido Harivex, and your kind should never have been given slack on the leash."
And Kalido grabs Smolder by the collar and lifts him off the ground with incredible strength and slams him into the organ's keyboards, releasing a terrible noise of discordant notes, and the magic of the rod erupts in a flash before the scene vanishes in a blast of white light, blinding you all for just a moment. And as your eyes recover, as you blink away the flash, you notice these emanations of light coming from the floor below. And that's where we're going to call it.
Jeez, dude, I was so wrapped up in that.
Bwah, bwah, bwah.
Fucking plot thickens, eh?
Yeah.
Stemming the Tide is an actual play podcast of the Adventure Path Abomination Vaults and is produced by the Uncharted North Network. Stemming the Tide uses trademarks and or copyrights owned by Paizo Inc., used under Paizo's community use policy. We are expressly prohibited from charging you to use or access this content. Stemming the Tide is not published, endorsed, or specifically approved by Paizo. For more information about Paizo Inc. and Paizo products, visit paizo.com. Music is composed by Will Savino and artwork by Greyhood. Stemming the Tide is recorded remotely using Foundry Virtual Tabletop. If you wish to connect with us or support this project and projects to come, we can be found at unchartednorth.ca, patreon.com/unchartednorth, and on all major social media platforms. Links to all credits can be found in the episode description and our website. Thanks for tuning in.